But over time, the grid needs to become more than just a transporter of power, an operator of power systems, a very sleepy enterprise, if even at a federal level or utility level. What it needs to be is a technology company, actually. It should be a company that has the capabilities to sense the need for energy in the near term, medium term, and long term. And that means collecting information about energy usage, collecting information about the environment and changes to the environment and weather, collecting information about population movement and growth, and using that information to do long-term planning and decide where new transmission lines should be built to reduce wasted energy. And so, yes, there's an incredible role to be played by software technology. Software has consistently played a role in innovating just about every fabric or industry in the world.
Hello and welcome to Earthcast, a platform for discussions about bridging the resource gap between people and planet. I am your host, Olivia Taylor, or Olivia Earth on the socials. I have the privilege of interviewing a series of changemakers, thinkers, and disruptors, and asking them about their fields of interest. Together, we will discover fresh perspectives and the most useful levers in society for change. More specifically, we will look at how to solve wicked problems and make decisions at the margin. If you would like to hear more from Earthcast, subscribe and follow us on social media. Earthcast Season 1 explores the just energy transition and unpacks varied topics such as finance, policy, deepening inclusivity, innovative technology, and how to accelerate the transition given climate limitations. Today, I have the privilege of speaking to John Belizaire on Earthcast. Since the age of 14, selling floppy disks in high school, John has had an entrepreneurial spirit and interest in technology. He was a recipient of the Intel Scholarship Program, and he went on to receive a computer science and engineering degree from Cornell University. When he was 28 years old, he sold his first startup company for $150 million. He has gone on to become a versatile CEO and serial entrepreneur who has successfully founded and scaled several more multi-billion dollar technology companies. Today, he is the CEO of Soluna, a company helping to shape the future of renewable energy development. His expertise as both a highly effective business leader and technology strategist has enabled his new venture and operational success, steering complex initiatives from concept to funding, launch and growth. So, first up, please tell us a little bit more about your career and what has led to your focus on renewable energy and the future of the grid.
Well, Olivia, thanks for having me on the show. Very exciting. And as I said, it's fantastic to be speaking to you from New York to South Africa. I've done that tour before. My career started in computer science space. I'm a computer scientist by training. I started out with Intel, the chip making company. And there's this little known secret that Intel had this massive software group back in the late 90s, 2000s space. And our job was to help drive more sales for the personal computer by helping to drive more interesting capabilities that you can do on the PC. And one of those, which is kind of funny to say now that we're speaking over a telecommunication system that's over two computers, but at the time, it was a sort of a very novel thing to use your PC to talk to your grandma and other kids. So I was in the group sort of working on that and also working on technology that helped to reserve bandwidth on the internet for these types of multimedia applications. So it's very interesting to see today where that type of technology really permeates just about everything we do. Shortly after that, I left Intel and joined my grad school friends and formed my first of a series of entrepreneurial ventures. It was focused on helping financial services companies and large institutions make their transition to the web. So e-commerce at the time was really taking off. Companies like Mosaic, Netscape, and the whole browser battles all took place in the early part of my entrepreneurial career. And we sold these Lego blocks, software componentry, again, things that happen today, almost like breathing, for technology were very novel at the time. So I literally walked around banks with a box of Lego blocks. And I said, this is the future of software development. And after some fascinating presentation, the guests in the room would say, wow, so how much do these Legos cost? And I said, well, these right here that I'm holding, these are $5. But the ones that I sell, they're millions of dollars. And that started a series of about 20 years, Olivia, of entrepreneurial ventures focused on sort of cutting edge, major transformational shifts. My most recent was in the insurance space, where I was helping large global insurance companies digitize their underwriting process. Most people don't realize it, but most underwriting operations are very manual. People walk around with little carts of folders and move them between teams to make these big complex decisions, especially for large commercial insurance. And what we did is digitize that so they can sit at one integrated console, like a Bloomberg terminal, and make decisions about insurance and use data and enhance their experience. And today, I head up a company called Soluna that is focused on bringing the power of computing to help accelerate the renewable energy transition. So I guess the best way to describe my career is a bit of a mosaic. There's lots of interesting experiences that have come together that sort of shape a person that's trying to master the role of being a CEO of fast growth companies.
John, I'm sitting here wondering if you ever have any time to sleep.
Sleep. I can talk so much about the importance of that. And I'd say I do my best to get as much as possible these days. In the past, I did not get much of it. But now that I know how important it is to your health and success as an entrepreneur, I try to get as much as I can.
John, at a high level, and with your experience, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the energy transition? You know, how should we be thinking about the trade-offs between a fast transition to renewables and the continuing reliance on fossil fuels?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. First of all, I think that one thing that is fascinating to me and I find very exciting is the fact that we have, as a species, as a global community, used something that is tragic. You know, we're now in the midst of a pandemic, and through the beginning of that, we learned how important our movements and our lives play into energy on a global basis. Right? Suddenly, energy usage went from, you know, sort of a limitless level to almost, you know, nothing around the world, right? That's sort of the planet almost went dark to some extent. And it was fascinating to see that that had a direct result in reducing the emissions that we could read in the atmosphere. And that really opened our eyes to how important it is to really start looking about our lives and the type of energy we use and how the energy infrastructure really plays an important role in the future of the world. All parts of the world aren't created equal, and I'd love to talk more about that. But I think the exciting thing is that we're now all focused and to some extent agree on the fact that we need to do something different to stem climate change and really accelerate the transition from fossil fuels to renewable power. Now, what that has resulted in is a tremendous increase in the amount of investment, regulatory changes, dialogue around how we can do that. Lots of folks like myself who had nothing to do with renewables has suddenly entered into the clean tech and renewable energy space, trying to bring innovation that happened in other industries into this space. I think that some reports show that in 2020, about $700 billion was invested in clean tech, clean energy, and other types of clean efficiency initiatives to really help accelerate the renewable energy transition. This year, toward the early part of the year, we are already, I believe, $50 billion higher than the previous year. So with all this capital coming in, you're seeing investments, you're seeing new technology, and you're seeing new infrastructure projects that are coming online all around the world. And these new infrastructure projects are focused primarily on energizing green energy power plants, solar plants, wind plants, and hydro plants, et cetera, around the world. You're seeing more geothermal. All of these technologies is just increasing the amount of energy that's going to be available in the world that is green. But there's a little unknown secret that as this increase occurs as a grid that was not designed to have intermittent resources like these added to it, gets more and more of these resources, less and less of the power that these power plants would like to send to the grid actually make it to the grid. So the biggest renewable, the biggest transition issue or the biggest challenge for the renewable energy transition is wasted energy, believe it or not, green energy that Mother Nature schedules to the grid that never makes it there because there just isn't enough demand for that power at the time that it's produced. And so it creates all of these financial pressures on the project owners and the power plant operators and the big funds that are building these projects. So much so that some of these funds are actually starting to pull back. Like, can we invest in this space? Because we're going to have lots of this curtailment, as it's called. And this is going to create a big challenge for us. So stemming or reducing wasted energy is a big challenge that's before us. And that's what we're focused on helping to solve at Soluna.
Taking us a little bit further, would you be able to explain that the terms energy poverty and wasted energy? You know, how did energy poverty come about? And is it evenly distributed across communities and countries? And how does this then play a role in the just energy transition?
Yeah. So defining the terms, I'll start there. So wasted energy is the best way to describe it is to go back a little bit to understand how the grid is designed. And when I say the grid, I'm really talking about the global grid, just about every grid environment that you might be living in is designed mostly the same way. It is designed to synchronize the production of power with the consumption of that power. And at least in the US, grid technology or power plants were actually vertically integrated with the usage. People used to have their own power plants, believe it or not. And over the years, that evolved to a point where the grid became a utility, a public utility, centralized. But the design in each local area was such that the grid operators would go out and project how much power would be needed. They could tell what the customers would need. And then they would design the facility to match that power. And they would then build these fossil fuel powered facilities, coal plants, et cetera, that would fire up and never fire down, you know, essentially providing power on a consistent basis. And to the extent that they had to reduce their output or something like that, they can do that instantly. And it was highly controlled by the grid. You know, there's this whole concept of dispatchability where the grid can push a giant red button and fire up a plant and deliver power where it was needed. As the world started focusing its energy on changing the mixture of energy on the grid, you started to see power plants that the grid no longer had control over. They couldn't truly dispatch them in this instant way. They could schedule them in, but the scheduling, if you will, was mostly controlled by Mother Nature. The wind in central parts of the United States, in Oklahoma, for example, will suddenly kick up one evening, depending on the season, and blow all night. But everyone's probably asleep in that region and not really in need of that power. So what happens to that energy? Well, what happens is most of the time, the power plants, the wind turbines will be shut off. And that power potential goes to waste. So that's what wasted energy is. It's energy that has the opportunity to make its way to the grid, but can't make its way to the grid because there isn't a need for it. There are other places where you have power plants that are being developed And the economy hasn't really reached a level where it can consume all of that power. And therefore, the power becomes, quote unquote, stranded. You have environments where power plants can be developed, even though there's tremendous potential for renewable energy development, everything from hydro, solar, wind, and those areas can't monetize that power because the grid infrastructure isn't there. And so you have all of these challenges that point to wasted energy, but that also sets the foundation for energy poverty. I follow Bill Gates on his newsletter and so forth. He does a great job of talking about all the things he's doing at the Gates Foundation. And more recently, he's been focusing a lot of his discussion around the renewable energy transition. And one of the recent books that he published called Stemming Climate Change. And in the book, he talks about his travels to the African continent, mostly sub-Saharan Africa. And he's traveling to these places. And as he flies over, he's used to flying over the United States and other well-to-do countries. And at night, as you fly over, you see all of these sort of glistening, almost Christmas tree-like lights that fill the sky, if you will. And in Africa, what he notices as he would fly over, it wasn't as bright. In fact, you would have huge swaths of travel time where it was completely dark. And he remarked that this was a clear example of the fact that not everyone is created equal as it comes to energy. If you put a graph together that shows all of the countries around the world and their energy consumption, what you'll find is that the richest countries are up and to the right, and the poorer countries, in terms of sort of, you know, power consumption to GDP, if you will, are, you know, lower down to the left and lower in the graph. And what that says is that, you know, lots of countries and in parts of Africa, billions of people have the inability to have persistent, reliable energy that allows them to light their homes, provide electricity for healthcare establishments, power their businesses. You know, there's brownouts and inconsistency in the power. That's a experience of poverty as it relates to energy. That's energy poverty where, you know, I take for granted when I wake up in the morning, when I flip the switch on, there's going to be light there. I can power my computer and I expect there to be persistent energy and available to me. In some places, people aren't able to do that. And that's a real challenge. And as we transition, there's an opportunity to change that framework. And what is particularly fascinating or counterintuitive is that solving the wasted energy problem, the way we're doing it here at Soluna, actually is a innovation that can reduce the amount of energy poverty. And I'd like to talk more about that when you're ready, Olivia. You know, I think energy poverty really comes from the fact that, you know, not every country has the wealth and, you know, economic firepower to build the infrastructure that they need to grow and expand. And frankly, most countries' infrastructure comes from private investment that invests in that infrastructure. Airports, for example, are built by large global infrastructure companies. Power plants traditionally are built by private companies. Governments put out these tenders and encourage folks to invest and build power plants to support the growth of the country. And as the country looks to expand its economy and grow and become an important participant in the global economy, they need more energy and more power. The challenge is, let's say you're one of these investors and you come to pick your country in sub-Saharan Africa. In fact, you can go to Northern Africa where we started our life as a company. In the southern part of Morocco, there was a community that is looking to become part of the global environment. We had a power plant site that was very large, about 900 megawatts that it could produce in terms of power, leveraging the incredible wind in that area. And the problem was that even though we could build the power plant, there was really no place for the energy to go. There was no grid in that location at the time. And so we came up with this idea, what if we could have a purchaser of that power that was embedded in the plant itself, a vertically integrated solution where you can have a computing facility that would buy the power and then turn that power into a global resource for computing around the world. Now, that computing would need to be somewhat compute intensive because you need to use up a lot of energy. So we thought about different applications like blockchain and cryptocurrency mining and other factors like that. And then later, we realized that things like AI and machine learning are also compute intensive and a growing part of the global computing fabric. And as we were developing the project and getting it to a point where it was ready to build, the grid did finally make its way down there and pass right over the site. And so we started designing a new approach to connecting the site to the grid. And it became clear that not only were we going to be able to use the computing to sort of be an energy user of the power plant, but also share and bring some of that power to the grid when it was ready to use it. Having the computing there at the power plant would allow us to integrate the power plant into the grid in such a fashion whereby we can deliver just the amount of power that the Moroccan economy needs from our power plant. And as the economy grew, we can deliver more of the power. And the power that wasn't used would not be wasted because we would have this computing that would sort of act as a buffer or a secondary user of that energy. And we thought to ourselves, wow, I wonder if this problem is prevalent in other parts of the world. And we spent about 6 months during the pandemic period studying this. And what we found was that actually wasted energy is a big problem. And we're going to need to find novel solutions like what we've come up with here to solve that problem. And so Soluna Computing evolved to take what we learned in our Morocco facility and take it all around the world. Take other parts of Africa where you may be able to invest and build a power plant, but if no one's going to use the power or you're not able to get a proper contract for use of that power because the economy isn't big enough yet, it's going to be really hard for you to make the case that you should invest in that country. And so with this solution, you can invest in a power plant. It will have a initial user or buyer of that energy. In fact, building a data center in that location would also improve the economy and bring interesting, high-paying technical jobs to the region. And then as the economy began to grow, you can shift and provide more and more of the energy to the grid. So it's almost like a kickstart, if you will, for bringing energy to places that are energy poor. And that's the exciting thing about what we're doing at Soluna. We're solving wasted energy. We're bringing that solution to rich countries that have lots of energy and lots of power plants that are kicking off. But this innovation also sets the stage for investors combining our solution and their traditional power plant development and taking it to, you know, different parts of the continent that could benefit from renewable energy. There's so many opportunities, and it just takes sort of thinking about things differently. You know, everybody talks about batteries and transmission as a way to deal with the wasted energy problem. But those solutions do have issues. You know, batteries are not as scalable as they need to be yet. To build batteries that can sort of address these issues, you'd have to build such large ones that it's just cost prohibitive to some extent. And transmission is another one. Can you move the power? What if you can produce energy in one location, like in Morocco, for example, and then transport it down to some of the other countries that would need that power if it was excess? That's absolutely a solution, but it's very hard and takes very long to build transmission capability across state lines, if you will, in the U.S., even in the U.S., going from you know, power in Oklahoma to Atlanta, for example, there are companies that have been built and died trying to get that done. And I think there's a lot of focus on changing that now. But what's exciting to me is computing is available today. It's scalable today. Computing is happening everywhere in the world, even in, you know, fairly poor places. There's some form of computing being used. Just about everywhere there is new AI-powered systems that are being developed to drive commerce and other types of healthcare applications, scientific computing, et cetera. What's amazing is that these types of applications, the specific ones that are very data intensive and analytic intensive and thereby energy intensive, they can be done anywhere in the world. As long as you have connectivity to the global internet system and access to power, ideally renewable power, then it's possible to create a global green data center platform that is both a service provider to the entities all around the world that need this computing, but also a solution to the wasted energy problem. And that innovation, which is in a way sort of one of those you hit yourself in the head, so simple, computing is something that can be done anywhere. And if you can build it the right way, you can also help address one of the biggest challenges in renewable energy and renewable energy and energy poverty and lots of other challenges in the world.
What do you think is an underrated or perhaps interesting interplay between wasted energy and energy poverty?
Well, it's very much what I was talking about is that, you know, if I go to a place where I could build a power plant, but that energy, quote unquote, is stranded or potentially wasted, I really don't have an opportunity to bring power to that region because I will find it very difficult to make a financial case and a business case for making that investment. I'd rather go someplace where I know I can sell the power to Google or some other large enterprise or something like that and create a reasonable return on my investment. Most investors in renewable energy and in infrastructure, unfortunately, are not altruistic in their focus. They are really focused on returns. They invest capital from large pension funds and other large financial institutions, sovereign funds, et cetera. And the goal is to generate a return over a long period of time. So how do you make a case for investing in, you know, parts of the world like sub-Saharan Africa or South America or parts of the world where it's very challenging to bring, you know, energy projects there? And the solution seems to lie in building a very different business model. If I want to build a project in a place that's energy poor, that I think has lots of growth potential, if they can unlock energy, then what I can now do is deploy a renewable energy power plant, but they can't get monetized. They can't get built because of this issue. Now, if I can deploy them with their own embedded battery, but the battery is not a battery, it's a computer. In fact, a computer is a better battery because it can absorb that wasted energy, turn it into revenue that the power plant can participate in. And just the right amount of power can now be delivered to that region. So suddenly it goes from zero power to some power, and that power can be used to power schools and hospitals and small entrepreneurial enterprises. And then eventually at some point you have a growing economy, and that economy as it grows needs more power. And you can send more power from that power plant. And as the economy grows, you can get more power. And you can build more power plants. And that just feeds on itself. It's that initial kernel, getting an infrastructure off the ground, that's really hard because there's potentially so much wasted energy that the financials don't make sense. But if you can solve wasted energy in this novel approach, suddenly you can build power plants where they would otherwise not be built. And that opens the door to really ridding the world of energy poverty. That's the interesting interplay or relationship between the two. Somewhat counterintuitive, but very powerful.
Should the developed world be conserving the global energy usage to allow developing countries to continue to develop, to allow living standards to improve? Is there a trade-off here? You know, and I ask this question because I live here in South Africa, and a lot of our power plants need to be decommissioned. A lot of them need to be upgraded. And, you know, we need a baseline that perhaps involves developing new power plants.
Well, the infrastructure transition is a global opportunity. One may say it's a problem because you've got to figure out how to shut down these old plants. They contribute to the CO2 emissions. They're old, challenging to maintain. And then you've got to replace them with new projects, innovations, and investments in new facilities. But what's interesting is now, today, as we speak, renewable energy is a cheaper source of power to deploy. It's cheaper in the sense that, you know, its lifespan is about the same as these traditional plants. It doesn't contribute any CO2 to the world. In fact, it's very limited even in the production of the plant itself. And its maintenance cost is significantly lower. And the opportunity then is to focus our energy on decommissioning the old facilities and investing in these new capabilities. And when you look at this at a sovereign level, right, that means planning a multi-year transition strategy. And that multi-year transition strategy involves the capital of the state and building economic development and investment programs to attract private investment into the state to help build out the infrastructure that the country will need to participate in the global renewable energy transition. Some countries who have the financial firepower are already underway with some of this, but as we've mentioned before, it introduces new problems, which is the wasted energy aspect of it. In the poorer countries, you know, it's very hard to plan because the question is, well, how are you going to make a case for these new power plants? How are you going to finance them? And where will that capital come from? Should it come from some of the richer countries that have really put more of the CO2 in the atmosphere and thereby making this whole problem very acute and therefore everybody needs to solve it? Well, those are some of the gnarly and interesting discussions underway at COP26 now, right? The nations are discussing how do we go from talk to action, but you know, who foots the bill for some of these investments? And I think the solution, I think, or the dialogue should really be about what innovations. You know, people tend to really just assume that there's only one way to catalyze a transition or catalyze the investment in a new technology or infrastructure project. What innovations can we use? Innovations in business models, innovations in incentives to bring investment in, using capabilities opportunities that are already underway in other markets like computing and things like that to inject into this problem. And it's exciting to see that a lot of those discussions are underway. You know, people are looking at new ways to incentivize transmission development. People are talking about how to build global funds that are invested in by multiple sovereign countries to support development of infrastructure in countries that are less well off than others to, you know, invest in these capabilities. And I think solutions where we can stage in the power, right? So you start by building a smaller green energy power plant and then, you know, reduce the production of that legacy plant. And then as you get that working, add more green power plants and then expand, you know, the footprint of the green mixture or green penetration on the grid over time. And using the methods that I talked about of sort of, you know, computing, absorbing some of the wasted energy to balance the grid and allow it to absorb more of this green energy. That's the thing, is the more the grid can retroactively receive technology or inject technology that allows it to become more flexible, the more you can put on green energy. And so I think that, you know, in the context of, you know, sort of what should happen with global energy usage, there's no way to reduce the amount of power significantly that we use, because the global economy is consistently growing. Technology is allowing that to accelerate and we're becoming more efficient. And so you will see growth there. I think the key focus should be growth in what type of energy we're using. Growth, there should be growth in green energy. You know, at Soluna, we fundamentally believe that green energy should be a global superpower. And we also believe that computing is a great, elegant catalyst for making that happen if people sort of change their frame of view. And so in younger countries, I think the focus should be moving away from saying, use less power, guys, because we need it. That's not really the dialogue. The dialogue is, how do we build more green energy here just as fast as you're building it there?
Next, I'd like to chat about something else, which is also something I know that you are very familiar with. And this is, you know, the future of the grid.
I get asked a lot about what I think the grid of the future looks like. To paint the picture, so when I walk the streets of New York City, I remark every now and then on the corner of a block, and you know, folks who've been to New York will remember that New York is sort of built like a grid, if you will, no pun intended. And at the corner of a block, every now and then you will find a payphone where, you know, years ago when I was growing up, you'd have to keep quarters in your pocket so you can make a phone call. And now you can pretty much call anyone in the world for free on a device that sits in your pocket. And that's been made possible by a global infrastructure that's been built and evolved over the course of two decades. It's the global internet, it's applications built on top of that. It's new innovative technology that has really looked to, you know, really make communication technology and commerce technology ubiquitous. So how do we do the same thing for energy and renewable energy? Well, first we have to start with re-architecting the grid. The grid, as I said, was initially built to be this synchronous technology. But over time, the grid needs to become more than just a transporter of power, an operator of power systems, a very sleepy enterprise, if you will, even at a sort of federal level or utility level. What it needs to be is a technology company, actually, believe it or not. It should be a company that has the capabilities to sense the need for energy in the near term, medium term, and long term. And that means collecting information about energy usage, collecting information about the environment and changes to the environment and weather, collecting information about population movement and growth, and using that information to do long-term planning and decide where new transmission lines should be built. Where should we have storage elements? How do we inject new infrastructure capabilities to the grid to reduce wasted energy? How do we increase the reliability of the grid infrastructure? And so, yes, there's an incredible role to be played by software technology. Software has consistently played a role in innovating just about every fabric or industry in the world at this point. And the fastest growing part of computing globally is AI and machine learning, using the power of computing to study the operations and fabric of even infrastructure systems can be used to better architect them in the future. And so when I look at the grid, it's the equivalent of sort of leaping from a traditional payphone to a, you know, iPhone in your pocket. The grid will be much smarter. It'll be more flexible. It'll have interesting combination of technologies and infrastructure elements that make it more powerful and globally interconnected. Right now, countries are sort of their own islands, if you will, from an energy perspective. But why isn't there a global energy grid, just like there's a global internet? Why don't electrons move from one country to the other and continuously move to the places where energy is needed the most? Why isn't there a global brain, if you will, really sort of thinking about how best to move energy and integrate it appropriately across different parts of the world? I once wrote a paper that talked about this whole concept of inversion, and where you start out with sort of questioning the role of technology. And then suddenly that technology is so ubiquitous, you question why that technology wasn't always there. You know, it's kind of like my daughter asking, Daddy, what is a camera? Because everywhere she turns, there's always a camera. It's like a ubiquitous thing. I think that's the future of the grid. It's a much smarter, flexible, and integrated system that is intelligent about energy and how it moves and supports the world.
First of all, I just wanted to say puns are always welcome on Earthcast. Always.
I couldn't help that one.
For everyone listening, if you'd like to follow more of what John does, you can find him on LinkedIn or find his company, SolunaComputing.com, where you can find their blog and podcast, where they also get and dive into some of these really exciting topics. John, it's been an absolute pleasure having you today. Thank you so much for diving deep into some of these topics. Last but not least, John, given your expertise, yes, what question should I have asked you?
Well, Olivia, I think you did a great job asking all the pertinent questions for me today. I think, you know, the question that I always enjoy answering is, what is my ikigai, which is the Japanese term for sort of, you know, alignment of passions with happiness, you know? And I try my best to search and find my ikigai just about every chance I get when I'm, you know, working on a new project or a new venture. And today I can thankfully say that this opportunity, which is one of several companies that I've formed, is my ikigai. It's the opportunity to play a significant role in accelerating the potential, unleashing the potential of renewable energy. It can have such a profound effect on the planet. It gets me up and running to my Zoom meetings every day and working on innovations to make that possible. And I'm very fortunate to be working with a team that shares that passion. And we want to have more people join us and get involved in what we're doing. And I think the expertise that we're developing is really about the confluence of renewable energy and computing. And I think that over time, this will be the way renewable energy is built. And that's very exciting. And it's exciting to have that as a North Star, if you will, for what we do.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Next episode, I will be asking more creatives and intellectual disruptors about making decisions at the margin. See you next time.